Let's go ahead and open to 1 Samuel chapter 25, where we'll pick up our story in verse number 32. The situation was that David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon, and they, during the fall and winter months of 1019 through 1018 BC, kept watch over some of the shepherds of Nabal who were keeping sheep and goats in the same region. They basically protected them from wild animals, any type of livestock thievery. So in the late spring, early summer, at sheep shearing time, David sent a few of his men to get takeaway from the celebrations of just one of the days of sheep shearing. Sheep shearing always involved days of work followed by evenings of celebration. And anybody that was in the community that had any type of connection to the livestock operation were invited to come and enjoy these celebrations. So David and his men, who couldn't come because they were hiding out, asked for takeaway. And Nabal, the owner of all these sheep and goats, insulted them. And David inappropriately responded. He got mad. I think it was misdirected anger that he's been tamping down inside of him that's actually against Saul and the people that are lying to Saul, the people that have been trying to kill him for the last several months. And so he actually swears before God that Nabal and all his male relatives need to die. Well, God sends Abigail to bring David to his senses. And that is exactly how David describes it. Her reminding of him that he's going to be the next king, that he has been the hero of Israel, that he's been used by God so much, would be horribly marred by him doing such an inappropriate thing as killing somebody that insulted him, because that's just not right. And so David does come to his senses, and let's pick up with how he compliments her and thanks her for being used by God to bring him back to himself. Verse 32 of 1 Samuel 25, David said to Abigail, "Blessed be he who is the God of Israel, who sent you to this day to meet me." So he believed there was divine intervention here. "Blessed be your discretion, your wisdom. Blessed be you who have kept me this day from blood guilt and from working salvation with my own hand." So basically, from avenging myself in a way that would be totally inappropriate and lethal to a lot of people. "For as surely as he who is the God of Israel lives, who has restrained me from hurting you." So apparently, she would have been on the list as well. In David's mind, he was angry at everybody that was in the household of Nabal. And so here he is thanking God that he hasn't wiped out this entire family, including her. "Unless you had hurried and come to meet me, truly by morning there would not have been left to Nabal so much as one male." And then David received from her hand what she had brought him. So the big takeout that she brought. And he said to her, "Go up in peace to your house. See, I've obeyed your voice. I've granted your petition." So you were right. I'm thankful God sent you. Thank you for the gift. You can feel free to go home. I'm not going to be coming there. There's not going to be anything negative happen. Verse 36. Abigail came to Nabal Behold, he was holding a feast in his house, like the feast of a king. So we already know that he's just not a good guy. He's full of himself, and he is not wise by God's standards. And so he's just having a good old time. And Novel's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. So when she gets home from this little expedition of salvation, he's like not even worth talking to. He's that far gone in his drunkenness. So she told him nothing at all until the morning light. She just goes to bed, waits until the next day. Verse 37, in the morning, when the wine had gone out of Novel, so basically he's now got his hangover, his wife told him these things, told him just how close he came to getting them all killed. And the way that the scripture puts it is that his heart died within him. His heart, which is the place where you make your choices. So his heart died with him, and he became as a stone. There's been a lot of ways of trying to understand this, and I have come to the conclusion, which agrees with a lot of things that I've seen out there already, that he had some sort of medical incident here. That when he realized what almost happened, he probably had a cardiac event or had a stroke, something that caused him to lose his ability to function. That's why he becomes like a stone. And then about 10 days later, he who is struck him and he died. So he who is probably struck him on this day when she told the news, that's when he had the cardiac event or the stroke. And then 10 days later, he quits breathing. Probably not being able to take food and water in. Eventually, that catches up with you. So he dies. And the text pretty much indicates that God was the one that did it, as a judgment against him for what he did to David, but not just that. Remember, he's been a bad guy for a long time. So this is the hand of God coming in judgment against this guy. Verse 39, when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, blessed be he who has avenged the insult I received at the hand of Nabal, and has kept back his servant from wrongdoing. So twofold, he is thankful that God took care of the issue. And I don't think he's only thinking about what happened that day that he was insulted. I think he understands that Nabal's got bigger problems. But he also repeats his thanks that God used Abigail to keep him from doing something inappropriate. He who is has returned the evil of Nabal on his own head. So that is the story of how David was rescued from inappropriate behavior by Abigail stepping in. This introduces then why it is that the next story happens. It says that David sent and spoke to Abigail to take her as his wife. So David is so impressed with her that he wants to make her his wife. Now we already know that David is married to Michal, the daughter of King Saul. However, by this time, David has probably been told that Saul has forced a divorce in absentia between Michal and David. Saul has basically declared that marriage null and void, and has remarried her, or at least is in the process of remarrying her, to another guy, somebody that Saul trusts. So that marriage, from, you know, the usual understanding of the time, is over with. So David was unmarried to Michal. So at first glance, it would seem that David is simply remarrying a woman that he believes is God-led and compatible with him, and that he would want by his side when he becomes king. However, we have to keep reading the story. Verse 40. When the servants of David came to Abigail at Carmel, they said to her, "David has sent us to you to take you to him as his wife." So David doesn't come himself and propose. He sends people in his place. But she is willing and ready to take on this relationship. So she rose, bowed with her face to the ground, said, "Behold, your handmaid is a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord." So she is exceptionally humble and basically says, "Thank you, I will accept." And then Abigail hurried, rose, and mounted a donkey, and her five young women attended her. And she followed the messengers of David and became his wife. Now let's talk a little bit about what we don't see here. We don't see any mention of any children going with her. And so I have the impression that she and Novel didn't have any kids together. That she may in fact have been a recent wife to Nabal. She might even be a secondary wife to Nabal. And so she seems to be going into this marriage as a woman without children. And she will end up having children with David. But she is not the only one that comes into this relationship around this time. Because we are told in verse 43, David also took Ahinoam of Jezreel. This is not Jezreel up in the north. This is Jezreel down in Judah territory. And both of them became his wives. So David has now started engaging in the process of multiplying wives to himself, which he is not supposed to be doing. And so we have to be honest in our critique here. It was common practice for men of prominence, men of power and authority, which kings definitely fall into that category, of taking multiple wives to themselves to seal deals, to seal treaties. And so David is starting to engage in that behavior before he even becomes king. So let's be aware that that started here a year or so before he actually takes the throne as king. Verse 44 is what I already told you. Saul had given Michal, his daughter, David's wife, to Palti, the son of Laish, who was of Galim. So David now has three wives that he has married. Michal is the first, and in my opinion, the legitimate wife. But she's been divorced from him by her father. Ahinoam and Abigail are his next two wives. And they are married, one of them perhaps as a way of connecting with the people in and around the Jezreel, Judah area. But Abigail, clearly because he felt that she was a good lady, a wise lady, a lady that would help him stay on track as king. Let's continue in chapter number 26. Then the Ziphites, Ziph was a city in this same general vicinity, an area south and east from Hebron. They came to Saul at Gibeah, saying, "Is not David hiding himself on the hill of Hakilah, which is on the east of Yeshimon?" Yeshimon is another part of this wilderness region we've been talking about. And so this is information probably coming in the spring of the year. In the same time of year that we were just talking about, the later spring, the early summer of the year. So Saul rose, went down to the wilderness of Ziph with 3,000 chosen men of Israel to seek David in the wilderness of Ziph. So even though the last time we saw King Saul, he was kind of backing off, because he realized that he was in the wrong, that David was going to be king. Well, he's back to his, I got to kill David idea. So Saul encamped on the hill of Hakilah, which is beside the road on the east of Yeshimon. But David remained in the wilderness. When he saw that Saul came after him into the wilderness, David sent out spies and learned that Saul had indeed come. So this is a game of cat and mouse throughout the region. There's some areas that are probably pretty well wooded that are closer up to Hebron, and then there are more scrubby areas that might have gullies and caves and switchbacks in the wadi system that give cover. And so it is definitely a big game of cat and mouse. Verse number 5, then David rose, he came to the place where Saul had encamped. So his spies have told him exactly where Saul and his people are camped out for the night. David saw the place where Saul lay with Abner, the son of Ner, the commander of his army. So this is Saul's cousin, Abner, slightly younger than him apparently, so I believe Saul's in his early, maybe mid-60s, so Abner's a little bit younger than that, I believe. And he is functioning as the head of Saul's standing army. Saul was lying with the equipment while the army was encamped around him. So Saul is at the center of this armed encampment. Probably a little campfire there. And they're all laying down, resting out in the open. It's warm enough that they don't need to be in tents. David said to Ahimelech the Hittite, and to Joab's brother Abishai the son of Zeruiah. So these are two of his close associates in his military endeavors. Joab is actually... Abishai and Joab are the sons of David's older sister. I often point out that more than likely, the three sons of Zeruiah were closer in age to David than you might be expecting. In fact, it might be one of those unusual situations, which I've seen in some families, where the nephews are actually older than the uncle. And so they're in his army, and so they said, who's going to go down with me to the camp, to Saul? So he wants to make a covert approach to the sleeping form of Saul. And he says, who wants to do this with me? And Abishai said, I'll go down with you. So David and Abishai went to the army by night. Now think about what this involves. They're going to have to make their way past the security pickets that are always posted at the edge of the encampment. They have to make it through the sleeping positions of the members of the army. And there's 3,000 of these guys. And they have to make it through all of that to the central part of the encampment where Saul is located. Now, they will discover in their approach that God has put a supernatural sleep on the encampment. More than likely, they'll see that with the pickets, with the security patrol at the very edge of the encampment. And so he and Abishai went to the army by night. And they get to the center, and there lay Saul sleeping within the encampment with his spear stuck in the ground at his head. So he's jammed his spear into the ground, and then he's laid down right next to it. His head is right next to the spear point that's in the ground, which is probably another little paranoia thing. He wants to be able to quickly grab a hold of this thing. And then Abner and his army lay around him. They're all asleep. Abishai said to David, "God has given your enemy into your hand this day." So this is the second time that it would appear that God is giving David the choice of what to do with Saul. And Abishai knows that David doesn't want to do anything, because that's been made pretty clear earlier. So Abishai makes an offer. "Now please let me pin him to the earth with one stroke of the spear. I won't strike him twice. So if you just give me permission, I will stab him through the heart and I'll pin him to the ground. I won't need to do it twice. It'll be over with quick. Just let me do it." Now, this is David's nephew, remember. But David said to Abishai, "Don't destroy him. For who can put out his hand against he who is his anointed and be guiltless?" So here, David is still in this situation where he does not want himself or anyone close to him to be responsible for killing Saul, because Saul was God's choice to become king. Samuel was directed to pour the sacred anointing oil over this guy's head. And so in David's mind, God's the one that needs to take him out. And he actually says that next. Verse number 10, David said, "As he who is lives, he who is will strike him, or his day will come to die, or he'll go down into battle and perish. He who is forbid that I should put my hand against he who is his anointed." So David has just recently seen Nabal taken out by God. He believes that. And even though David had originally thought he was going to take him out by the sword, he's now come to the conclusion that God did it. So David is like, "No, we've got to let God be the one that takes out Saul. So this is what we're going to do instead. Take now the spear that it's his head and the jug of water, and then let us go." So grab his weapon, grab his canteen, and let's get back out of the camp. So David took the spear and the jar of water from Saul's head, and they went away. No man saw it or knew it, nor did any awake, for they were all asleep because a deep sleep from he who is had fallen upon them. So that's the commentary of the inspired author of this section of 1 Samuel, a prophet, no doubt, who has inside information. God allowed them to take the spear and the canteen. Then David went over to the other side. He stood far off on the top of a hill, with a great space between them. So that's more than likely what happened in the earlier incident as well. And then David called to the army. And he said to Abner, the son of Ner, "Will you not answer, Abner?" So probably calls his name, "Abner, Abner, will you not answer, Abner?" Which Abner's waking up from this God-given deep sleep. And so once Abner finally comes awake, he answered, "Who are you that calls to the king?" So understand, it's dark, right? It's the middle of the night. And so David said to Abner, "Are you not a man? Are you not, you know, are you not a soldier? Are you not the guy that's supposed to be taking care of things? Who is like you in Israel?" Now Abner and David have served together. For all practical purposes, Abner was probably David's commander, the guy that he ultimately reported to when David was a commander in the army of Israel. So, "Aren't you a man? Who's like you in Israel? So why then have you not kept watch over your lord, the king? For one of the people came in to destroy the king, your lord. So how come you fell down on your job, sir? Somebody came in and they thought about assassinating the king. This thing that you have done is not good. As he who is lives, you deserve to die because you've not kept watch over your lord, he who is his anointed." Which is an interesting thing for him to say. It is a capital crime in most instances of military law to fall asleep on guard duty, especially if that guard duty is over the commander. And so David chides him for this and then gives him something to check. "Now see, where is the king's spear and the jar of water that was at his head? So look around. What's missing? The king's spear and his canteen," which means we were just close enough to cut his throat. "Why did you let that happen, Commander Abner?"